Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, December the 5th, or 22nd day of the month of Kislev. This is the Women's Mishnah Shir. We're up to Maseches Bava Kamma, Perek Aleph, Third Mishnah.
Okay, Rabotai. Just a calendar issue. We will be meeting next week, which is Hanukkah, but we'll have a shir on Inyani Hanukkah. Even though there's one sugya in Bava Kamma that relates to Hanukkah. It's in the sixth parak about a guy who's walking with his donkey, and it's full of material. And as he's walking, somebody has a lamp outside, and all the material catches fire. So the question is, who's responsible? Is it his own fault because he was walking maybe too close to the house? Or is it the housekeeper if he shouldn't put a fire out there? So there's a whole discussion. But on Hanukkah, everybody says he's putter because he has a right to put his lights outside. So it's the responsibility of the guy with the animal to make sure they should know people light their Hanukkah menorah outside. So there's a discussion in Bava Kamma about Hanukkah. It's the only... Yeah. Okay. We are going to see the third Mishnah, and there is a major sugya based on the fourth qualification of the Mishnah. So we'll translate the first two or three and then proceed to the main issue for tonight. Shum kesef. Shvei kesef. Bifnei bezdin. Al pi edim b'nei chorim b'nei brit. V'hanashim b'chalal hanezek. So Rashi just says, I'm not going to bother, just look at the Gemara. Rashi says, the Gemara explains everything. Okay. So, just take a look at the Gemara. It'll take one, again, I'm not going to focus extensively on each one. My shum kesef. What does this mean, shum kesef? Shum comes from the word evaluation. Shuma is to appraise, an appraisal. The appraisal should be done in money. What does this mean? Amar Rav Yehuda. Shum zeh lo yehe elo bekesef. This evaluation shall only take place with precision using money. So the Gemara will explain in a second what happened. My cow is walking, and there is a garment lying there. My animal trips over the garment, and it rips the garment. So there is a double suit. The owner of the garment is suing the cow owner. You ripped my garment. The owner of the cow is suing my cow broke your leg. So the Gemara says, the Braisa will say, you know what? It might be easy to say, you know what? Let's just call it a deal. I have a claim, you have a claim, forget about it. Says the Mishnah, no. You have to investigate each act of damage independently. And if there is any differential, obviously what must happen? You have to pay the kesef. That's what the Mishnah says. Tanina lahadatan rabbana. Para shehizika talus. A cow destroyed, ruined a garment, a talus. Vitalus shehizika para. And a talus was responsible for injuring the cow. Ein omrim teitse paris para betalus vitalus vipara. One does not say, you know what, just call it even Steven and that's it. Ella shamin. Osa bidamin. You evaluate it based on the monetary consideration, and in effect, two separate dine Torah should take place. Person A, the cow owner, sues the garment owner for having broken a leg, and the garment owner sues the cow for destroying his garment. And the Gemara here could have spent 50 pages trying to come up, what kind of case would it be possible to have a double suit? A double suit. What kind of case? Where was this talus lying? In the Rosh Hashanah. Okay? So if it's in the Rosh Hashanah, who, what, you know enough, Rabotai, to categorize what is the act, what type of a mazik is the talus? If you're going to sue a person, he's got to be sued for something. What was the talus? We know that there are four major categories of damages. Which one would you classify it as? Let's not all jump at the same time.
The animal causes damage by its teeth.
Oh. The animal... No, who said it did it by its teeth? What is... What? It's a bar. Good. It's a pit. But it's not a pit. That's correct. It's not a bar, but it's a bar. Because what is the tchuna, the characteristic of a bar? What is the tchuna of a bar? You go to it, and as soon as you create it, it's automatically in set up to create damage. Tchilato asiyato lenezek. As soon as you do it, it's already potentially going to damage. You dig a hole in the street.
But what was set up to damage? You're leaving your talus.
Yes.
It wasn't set up to damage. It was.
Well, a hole's not set up to damage either.
Yes, but a hole can cause.
Okay, but okay, when you it's something to trip on. It's something to trip on.
Say you plant a tree, and that's because the ox can bang into. Good.
If you were to plant a tree in the middle of the street, and the ox bumps into it, we would have the same thing.
Yeah,
the
but
tree
this,
would
this
be a
talus
pit.
Is not in the middle of the street. This talus is in your backyard on your
Two seconds ago, I asked, where is this case taking place? You have to help up. Where is this case taking place? Please. Up until now, we've only seen wherever a mazik is one-way damage. The pit is in the street, my ox falls in, nothing happened to the pit. Trust me. So there's only one suit. The ox that fell in will sue the owner of the pit, the guy who dug the pit. When my ox gores, only one type of damage took place. Either I or my animal got gored. When my animal walked into your garden and ate up the vegetables, nothing happened to the animal. He ate a good lunch, but nothing happened to him. Here we're having at the very same time two things are happening. So I ask you, where in the world is this taking place so that it would be possible to have what? Two mutual suit. So your first response has to be by identifying the pit, the talus as a pit. It is a bar, so you have to be dealing with the Rosh Hashanah, at least in theory, because that's where a pit is dug and you are held accountable.
If it's in your backyard.
Oh, that's correct. If I dig a pit in my backyard and you don't have any permission to walk in. That's your tough luck. I have a right to dig a pit in my own backyard.
What if people use your backyard as a shortcut? It's like a.
If I granted them permission, so it takes on the quality of a public domain. They had rishut. But normally the halacha of a bar is berishut harabim. That's where you dig a pit and cause damage and perhaps will be held accountable for. If I dig a pit in your backyard, of course I'm gonna be chayv. And I'll be chayv for a lot worse than my animal for destroying your property. So here you're talking about somebody digs a pit, thinks it's a public thoroughfare, I'm gonna dig a pit. So in this situation, the suit is the ox suing the owner of the garment based on the mazik of bor. Okay? Good. What is the talus? How is the talus guy suing the owner of the pit? What mazik was that? What mazik was that? Regel. That was regel. What is the definition of regel? that it's mazik biderech hilucho. It didn't intend to damage. It got no benefit from, as opposed to eating the what? As opposed to eating the... Exactly. So when it's regel, under those circumstances, if it's just walking and it steps on something, the problem is that regel is patur b'rushus harabim. Why is regel patur b'rushus harabim? Because you have to be aware of the fact that there are animals walking in the street. What are you leaving your pots there and your pans there and your towels there?
Material is not normal.
What?
And it's normal for an ox to walk through or a board to be there. Good, it's not normal for material to be there.
I know. So, but it's if the material is the same thing like a pot. Why am I suing the owner? Why is the guy who's the talus owns the talus suing me, my ox? Because I ripped the pot. Well, I smashed my ox. Smashed the utensil. He doesn't have to pay for it. A rishus harabim. So it's actually a little difficult to concoct a case where there would be a mutual suit of one another based on the conditions of bar can only be triggered where in a public thoroughfare. Regel can only take place, as the Torah writes, ubi er b'stei acher, in the nizak, in the nizak's rishus. Can't take place with Rishus Harabim. Shein and Regel are part of Rishus Harabim. So it's actually a little difficult to create a case where at one time both things have to happen. But I only misled you because who said that it happened to have to take simultaneously? Who said so? First thing that happened was my talus was where? In the public thoroughfare. Good. My ox tripped over it, broke its leg. 2 minutes later, I picked up my garment and I put my garment back where? On my yard. Now this guy, with his broken leg ox, coming to my house to do what? To sue me. What happens? His ox now rips my garment that's on the floor.
That's what this is talking about.
I'm just trying to create the case.
I have to infer all that from this.
You don't have to infer, but that's what it is. You have to create.
It's a lot of signs.
You have to create a case, ladies, where the two items are engaged in a mutual suit.
It can't be an either one.
Right? It's talking about parash is equal. Because that's the rule of the Mishnah. It wants to illustrate a rule. That when you have a countersuit, don't just exchange, you know what, we're both suing each other, let's forget about it. No. You have to assess damage A, assess damage B, and the differential is paid in cash. So I just ask you to concoct the case where you have a bull, a cow, and a garment, which is the illustration of the Gemara. How is that possible that you have a countersuit?
It could be a wind one.
What?
It could be the wind case.
What happened?
There's a force, there's wind that's blowing the garments into the... Yeah, so then it's there. It's not like the owner was...
No, what happened to... Where did it land?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying whether it's Rishut HaRabim or Rishut HaYechid.
Where did the damage take place?
My initial assumption was Rishut HaRabim.
Good. That's why it's a bar. How did the animal get damaged with the garment? It must have tripped over it. That has to be in Rishut HaRabim. Good. Now for my animal to be responsible for what? For ripping the garment, where does that have to take place? In Rosh Hashanah.
But you really can't compare the two. Because
I'm not comparing the two. I'm trying to tell you that if you're thinking of a case, the case could not have happened simultaneously.
Because the material in Rosh Hashanah.
For example, if you have a car carriage, right?
Of each,
so two people can suffer from the same single accident, there can be two people who suffer, right? The car that hit and the car that was hit, now both of them could have suffered damage. And so each one was saying, your fault is my fault. No, that's one single event. Here I'm pointing out that the two events might wind up in court to be sued, but it couldn't have been a single event that led to both damages. Because the responsibility for the talit could not have taken place in the same location, the same venue, as the responsibility for the cow as a bar. Yeah.
Why not again?
Shane and Karen also, I don't remember, are they also only in...
Shane and Vega was just around. Karen is any place.
Who said, just as Parashah Hezika tells, let me say Parashah Hezika, but we saw her regal, it could be Parashah Hezika, but Karen.
That what? With its...
And then it picked up the cloth with its horns and it tore it.
And how did the cow get hurt?
What?
It ripped the thing and it got hurt.
I mean, it could happen.
But what happened? It got tripped over what?
Because this person had the
power on the floor,
and the shore was at fault because the shore picked it up with its horn and damaged it. But because the shore picked it up with its horn, the shore couldn't see, tripped, fell, and
over what?
Well, it couldn't see because of the
over one. It's possible.
It's as possible as the other instance of immediately after.
Okay, but it doesn't have to be immediately. It can be 5 days later.
And it could be with the deer. It doesn't have to be the same shore.
That's correct. Right, but the Mishnah, the Brises, it looks at Parash Zikatal, Parash Zikapar. Yes. Okay, so that's a good question. For this respect, a carmelit will be treated like a Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. Because this is not a halachic issue of character. It means where you have access to. Does the public have access to it? So West Lakewood Avenue is not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. It's a carmelit. But the public has access to it. So there are different criteria for Hilchos Shabbos versus the Zikin in that regard. Shane and Regel, when they damage in Rosh Hashanah, the owner of the ox is exempt. Because the burden then is upon the person whose item was damaged. He shouldn't leave it because he has to expect that there's an animal in the street.
Could you translate back into Hebrew for a second? The four categories now you have Shane, Bor, the one you're calling Rega. What did we call that in English the first time?
We did.
But I'm not in English here.
I know. Shor, according to... Shor has three possibilities. The word Shor has three possibilities. An ox that gores, an ox that eats something for its benefit, and an ox that damages as it is walking with Rega. That's the simple word of the word. Can mean all three.
So then those are three of
so
the four?
No.
That's
one.
That's
one.
Do each of the four have a subcategory like Shor, or just Shor has it?
Just Shor. Bar is just a bar. Aish is just an Aish. Okay. I said I don't want to spend a lot of time on this one. Shum, that's Shum Kesef. Shove kesef, says the Gemara with the Gimel, the Tana Rabbanan. Please, shove kesef. Milamed she'ein betin nizkakin elo l'nechasim sheyesh lahem achrayut. This teaches us that the only way in which Beis Din imposes a charge for damages caused is not that you pay cash. You pay property worth that amount of cash.
That's their only
achrayut. No. Let me just, don't answer the question yet. Let me just explain. The halacha is, in fact, we saw it in the first Mishnah. Kishehizik chav amazik l'shalem b'meitav. Remember b'meitav? With the best quality land. Assessment for damages is never done in terms of dollars. It's never done in terms of movable property. It's always assessed in terms of what? Property. I owe you $100. Okay. So now, I'm not going to take a $100 bill out of my wallet. Beis Din will assess my property and say it's worth $1,000. One-tenth of the property has to be given to you. That's the way nizakin are evaluated. B'meitav ha'meitav sadehu u'meitiv karmo yishalem, says the Torah. Here the Gemara adds, Melamed she'ein betin nizkakin, betin will only attach itself in terms of a claim, ela nichasim shiyesh lahem achrayut. Nichasim shiyesh lahem achrayut means, is a nickname, a code name for karka, for real karka. And I'll explain the term in a second. Metaltalin, this tape recorder, is called Nichasin She'en Lehem Achrayut. And I'll give you the technical explanation of it. Here is the case. I borrowed $1,000 from you. Okay? I owe you $1,000. I don't have $1,000 to pay. I have no assets whatsoever. Let's assume the loan took place last week, last Wednesday night. On Thursday morning, I had a piece of property and I sold it to you. Okay? I sold it to you. Now you, the lender, come to me and say, you know what? You owe me $1,000. I don't have anything. Too bad. You have a right to go to Beit Din and seize the piece of property that I sold because that piece of property has a lien attached to it. Because I sold it after what? We all, when we bought our house, we did a title search. Why did we do a title search? To make sure that there is somebody who once owned this house doesn't owe $30 million. Because if he does owe $30 million and then the guy finds out about it, my house is going to be lost and I'll have lost every last penny. However, if I sold to you a tape recorder, you, the lender, have no access to this tape recorder, even though I sold the tape recorder after the loan has been established. Achrayut means something for which there is responsibility. It carries along with it a... Literally, achrayut means responsibility. What?
It's a liability.
It's a liability. Correct. It's a liability. It's good to have a lawyer here. A liability, namely, that if it were to be sold, the lien is attached to the property, and the lender can seize the property as an asset to pay off their debt. I'm not going to go into debate whether or not whether I have to refund you the money. That's a different discussion. Some say I don't. It's your tough luck because you didn't research it properly. You didn't research it. So a code name, whenever you see the word in Shas 30,000 times, Nichasim Shiyesh Lehem Achrayut, it means karka. Nichasim she'ein lahem achrayut. It's movable property, what we call mitaltalin. Litaltel means something that can be moved. Says the Mishnah, assessment of damages is always done with what? Nichasim she'yesh lahem achrayut. Aval, im kodam nizak v'tofas mitaltalin. Betin govin lo mehen. If the nizak, who is the nizak? Person who was damaged. Says, you know what? I'm not waiting. I see you have a tape recorder. Right? I see that. You're the mazik. I see you have a tape recorder. So I just go over there and I grab it. I grabbed it. And you don't have any property at all. If you have property, Bezdin's going to say, Adler, give back the property, give back the tape recorder, and we'll give you the property. Okay. Problem is, you don't have any property. The halacha is, under those circumstances, if I was tofas, if I grabbed it, then Bezdin is allowed to say it's mine. But initially, the assessment is only made based on what? On karka. And if you don't have karka, what's going to happen now? If you, the mazik, don't have karka, what's going to happen? If I didn't grab it, if I wasn't such a hustler, and I know, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Talk there? You're going to lose? Are you, talk too bad? Too bad.
So the grabbing yes. of the tape recorder, that wasn't stealing?
It was, it should not be done, but under certain conditions, if there is something that the person will owe you eventually, we allow you, we will not allow you, but if you did, we are not going to take it out of your hand. Because the halacha knows, you know, he owes you money.
So if I know the person has no money, and then I, and baked in is going to start in my favor, I can just go and grab.
Yeah, that's correct.
Do you have to return it at that point when he might have a car?
Yeah, that's something else. Yes, probably yes.
No, it's encouraging bad media. So if I ask for it, I won't get it. If I grab
that,
it,
okay, that's fine. No, then what happens if after I seize the asset, 5 days later you got property? So I'll give you back. You give me the property. There's no doubt. But all of this, ladies and ladies, what does this support? What chidush about laws of damages that this support, does this halacha support for you? Listen to this. I smashed your windows. My animal busted your car. If you don't have a piece of property, I don't owe you a nickel. What does that tell us about the laws of damages? What does it tell us about the law of damages? What would you have said had you not come to share tonight?
Pay me back.
Of course.
What?
If I didn't come, what would you say? You don't have property, what do you pay?
Money.
Anything else, of course. Why? Because that's logical. That's logic. But I told you day number two, not the first year. The laws of Nizakin are considered an absolute chidush of the Torah. It's not something that we could say, you know what? This is absolutely compelling, absolutely logical, and I don't need the Torah to set up its guidelines. No. If not for the Torah creating the obligation to pay for damages, you and me would have no recourse whatsoever, as logical as it seems. And what will happen? I won't have to pay you a nickel. Why is that essentially different than theft? I can't explain. If I were to steal something for you, I don't need the Torah law to tell me that what? And I have to pay you back. Because lo tignov applies to what? To Gentiles as well. Gentiles and Jews. Equally. Violate an Issa Doraisa if you steal from a Gentile. But damages, as we saw last week, if I damage a Gentile's property, do I have to pay him a nickel?
No.
Not a penny. Not one penny. That doesn't seem terribly fair. It's not. I'm saying, it's not terribly fair. But if it's only unfair if we examine it through the lens of human logic. Then it's unfair. But if we operate on a different perspective, that if not for the Torah, there would have been no compelling obligation to pay for anything, because I could have said, tell me what I could have said. Humans are not responsible for their property. Would that be such a bombastic statement, outlandish statement? We are not responsible for our property? I should control my ox? I can't control this. He's got his own little mind. I have to worry about my pits? You worry about walking, don't you open up your eyes and don't fall into my pit. I could have argued that. So once the Torah has the upper hand and establishes the creation of what? Of the payment, now all of the details, this is what the Torah said. That's it, end of discussion. And don't be so shocked. Because if not for the Torah creating the debt obligation at all, you would have been out every last dollar, because alpi logic, we cannot create obligations for damages. I can't explain why. I can just tell you something, that we are not held accountable based on our rationale for our property that causes damages. We are not. We're only held accountable for what we damage, not for our property. So it's a chidush. You might say, I don't know, I don't know. What does the law say? Does the law say you automatically assume responsibility for your property?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yes.
So then, parsha nizika tala sital shen nizika para. It actually is both things. There are two reasons that you wouldn't. You can't just call it a day. One is because it has to be shamanah samadamin, and the other one is because the payment would have to be in karka.
That's correct. The payment would have to be cut. But you can't say, the first halachas is, you know what, let's just call it even Stephen. You know, what do we have to go through everything? It looks like it's pretty much the same. It looks like it's 100 dollars of damage. My animal may be 100. It looks pretty... No, don't assume that anything's equivalent. Valuate it to the dollar and then make the payment in karka. That's correct. In karka. Yeah. Now there are many things in which halacha distinguishes between. In fact, the Gemara touches on. I want to elaborate, but I'm just going to mention one, which the Gemara, which is a distinction between property and movable property. First of all, just one onaah. The laws of onaah do not apply to property. What is the law of onaah? Onaah is that you can't overcharge somebody more than 1/6. You're not going to overcharge at all. If there is a standard market rate to anything, you cannot exceed that regular market charge. If it's within 1/6 of an overcharge, the deal stands and you refund the differential. So if there is established price on apples, $1 a pound, and I charged $1.05, the halacha says the deal stands and I have to give you back 5 cents. If I charge you $1.16, $1.17, the deal is canceled. Refunded. By onaah, by karka, there ain't no such thing. So if houses in Teaneck, New Jersey go for an average of $800,000, and you decide to pass for $1,000,002, be my guest. Be my guest.
What about with services? Let's say a doctor or something.
I don't know. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know.
Also, like you
but by onaah, it's the answer is because location, location, location.
But you say karka, you don't really mean a house.
I mean property. Right. Real property. Any property. But a house is real property. So that's what the Gemara means by the words shove kesef. State number three in the. I want to get to the main point tonight.
Isn't it the land that the house is on? It's not the house.
No, the house is considered anything that can't be moved is halachically property. You can't move a house. It's not movable. And improvement. Okay. Case number three. Statement number three. Bifnei Betin. All claims have to be adjudicated in the presence of a bet din. A bet din. Okay? You have to assemble three dayanim in order to make an assessment to see whether you're guilty or not. You have to do it in front of Beis Din. The alpi edim. In order to create a debt, in order to create the obligation, it has to be done based on the testimony of two witnesses. What type of witnesses? Bnei Chorin, not slaves, and Bnei Brit, members of our faith community. And not women. I'm reading the Mishnah. I'm back to the Mishnah. Alp, number one, end of the first line. Back to the mission, the top of the page. Bifnei Bet Din. The case has to be prosecuted in Beis Din. The Alpi Edim. Only testimony administered by witnesses who are free and members of Am Yisrael. And here is where I want to get into something which is very, very challenging. The role that witnesses play. Here is the case. Let me ask you this. If I borrow money from you, okay, and I come to court, there are no witnesses whatsoever. You have no document to prove it. You sue me in Beis Din. So what could I have done? Could have denied the whole thing. And I would have gotten away with it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would pay me back. But in court, you would have no recourse whatsoever. But I blurted out, I said, you know what? I did borrow the money. Ha! As soon as Beis Din hears that, in Beis Din, it's called Hoda'at Baldin Kishtei Edin Dami. The acknowledgement of the guilty party is the equivalent of what? Of two witnesses. However, this only applies if the money owed to you is not considered a fine. If there is something that is considered a fine, you never pay based on your own acknowledgement. Does anybody know of a compensation according to Torah law that is undoubtedly a fine? First of all, define a fine. It's in excess of what you debt, of what you owed. It's in excess of what you owe. So if, as you are seated right here, I go to your house and I break into your house and I steal a Rambam. Okay? I steal a Rambam. What else would I be stealing? I steal a Rambam. What? Then I get the yaitzah with it. What else? I steal a Rambam. Very nice. The Rambam is worth $50. I am now prosecuted in court. How much do I have to pay?
$100.
A ganav pays kefa. But if I come to Beis Din and acknowledge my wrongdoing, I don't pay the kefa. Modeh biknas is patur. If the person acknowledges the activity which triggered a fine and it was not prosecuted by Beis Din, by Edim, if the admission of the guilty party involved a fine, under those circumstances, Beis Din cannot impose that fine. Why do I tell you this? Because it's going to relate right now to Bava Kama. Please, in a machlokes we once discussed about 2 weeks ago, but here is the source of it once and for all. On the next page, on the top of the page, Hikma, the bet of the Gemara. Hikma. Palga Nizga. I told you that when an ox gores with its horns, when an ox gores with its horn, the first 3 times it only pays how much? How much? Only 50% of the damages. Chatzi nezek. Palga Nizga. Rav Papa Amar Mamona. Rav Papa says, the 50% payment is actually what I really owe you. I really owe you 100%. But the Torah is nice the first 3 times, it only says 50%. But Al-Pidin, Mamona means something that I owe you based on monetary law. Rav Huna, Gerei de Rav Yeshua, Omar Knasa. Rabbi Yehuda, the son of Rav Huna, Rabbi Yeshua says, no. When my ox gores the first 3 times, I owe you nothing. Al-Pidin, logically, I owe you nothing. But Beis Din imposes a fine up to 50%. So there are two ways that you can look at a payment to 50%. You can say, A, that you should have paid 100%, and the Torah is nice, has compassion, and say only pay 50%, but by right you should have paid 100%. Choice B is by right I should pay 0. And as a fine, to make sure that I'm a little more careful with my ox, and he doesn't go around goring, they impose a 50% fine.
For those 3 times.
For the first 3 times. So now, I'm going to read the Gemara and say, tell me what
immediate halachic difference emerges between these two people based on the law that I just told you.
So if there were no witnesses and he admitted to it, then if it's a fine, he doesn't have to pay it, but if it's an actual, he owes it, then he has to pay
Good. It. Good. That's the first step. I'm going to make it a little more complicated in a second, because that's going to be a secondary machlokes. Here's what happens. I know that my ox gored and caused $100 worth of damage. I know that. Now, I don't know if there are any witnesses around. I have no idea. If there are witnesses around, there are witnesses around, and the witnesses come to Beit Din, there is a possibility that what might happen, that what happened, that I'm going to be charged.
The question is, should you admit it or not?
That's correct.
So in your benefit.
Now, so if the first opinion is correct, that the essence of the 50% payment is mamon, that means by right I owe you the money, if I come to Beit Din and acknowledge it, Beit Din is going to say, okay, buddy, you acknowledged it, you pay.
100%.
No, I will pay the 50%. So I have nothing to lose by keeping quiet. If the witnesses come, I'll be assessed the 50%. If they don't come, I'll escape it. But if halacha, if choice B is correct, Rav Huna's opinion, that the nature of the payment of the 50% is that really you should have paid nothing. Because the Torah acknowledges how difficult it is for you to watch your ox. It doesn't expect you to be able to watch your ox. And as a result, the first three times you get scot-free. But the Torah assessed a payment, a fine. So now what's in my best interest to do? Run to Beit Din.
Get it over and closed.
Exactly. Over and closed. Then I'm off the hook. Off the hook. Off the hook. The Gemara will discuss what happens if I come to Beit Din and admitted it, and then witnesses showed up. Will that reintroduce the fun? We'll get to it in a little second. First, let's understand the core of the machlokes itself. Whether the nature of chatzi nezek is to be viewed A, as mamon, or is it essentially a fine? Let's read a couple of lines of the Gemara, just to gain something, because it's going to be instructive for us in terms of understanding the mazik of keren, because there's enormous debate about it. Itmar, I'm reading again from the top of the page. So just bear with me for a couple of lines. I know it's difficult. Palga Nizka, where you have Chatzi, Palga, Chatzi, Nizka. Chatzi Nezek associated with Keren of a Shor. Rav Papa Amar Mamona. Rav Papa says the nature of the payment is viewed as Mamon, something which you owe according to Torah law without problem. Rav Huna Barei de Rav Yeshua Omar Knasa. Rav Huna says no. It's an assessment of a fine, and by right I should have paid absolutely nothing. The Gemara is going to elaborate. Rav Papa Omar Mamona Kasavar Stam Shvarim Lav Becheska Shimur Kaimon. Stam Shvarim, ordinary ox. Lav Becheskak Shimur Kaimon. What does that mean? Lav Becheskak. No, you shouldn't assume that they will be watched. Lav Becheskak Shimur. You can't make an assumption that they are going to be watched. So if you can't make an assumption, who is saddled with the burden of making sure that they don't go out and damage? You are, the owner of the ox. Ubedinhu, and by right, deba'i l'shalume kule. You should have paid for the full damage. Tell me why. We have already said this. Why should you pay for the full damage? What triggers obligations to pay? We said this the first night. What triggers the obligation to pay by damages?
Negligence
that I didn't do what? I didn't watch. I was obligated to do something. I was obligated to watch the animal. because I have no right to assume that my animal is not going to run wild. I have to assume that the animal is going to run wild. If I have to assume the animal, I better lock it up. I better be careful. Well, if it got out and it didn't, I wasn't careful, I should have paid 100%. V'rachmana, and the Torah, Rachmana means the compassionate one, meaning God, who dechas alei. He had rachmanas upon me. De'akate lo iya'i ture. His ox has not yet become a mu'ad. It's still not something which is the pattern of an animal. He's still not, he's still acting a little different, a little bizarre. I acknowledge you should have watched it, but it is something a little unusual for the animal to go ahead and gore. So therefore, you know what? First three times, I mean, they'll have a little compassion, make you only pay 50%. Rav Huna of Bereg Rav Yeshua Amar Knasa. He says, no, it's a fine. Kasavar Stam Shvarim Becheskat Shimur Kaine. There is an assumption that is made that ox are normally guarded. What does that mean? That what pattern don't they exhibit? They don't run wild and they don't run gore. Meaning, you can leave them in your backyard, no fence. And the assumption is that where will the ox be? Right where you left it. That's the assumption. The Torah, right, Albert, Torah has entered the mind of an ox. And the ox stays put. The ox stays put. What's my... This guy's crazy.
That's the opposite of what we said.
Ubedin hu klal. And by right, then I should not have paid a nickel. V'rachmana, and the Torah, hu diknase. The Torah imposed a fine. Ki hechi belintere l'tue. Because your axe is acting a little strange. Your ox is acting a little strange. You better take care of him. How do we get your attention to make sure that you take care of him? Pay 50%.
Rabbi, yeah,
hold on 1 sec. Just 1 sec. What emerges from this discussion, and this is part of a major debate, that it looks like the unique characteristic of Karen is not so much kavanato lahazik, that it intended to do damage. What is the defining characteristic of Karen? Whether it's mishune or not. What's a mishune? It's not unusual. Whether it's unusual. So now, the first opinion, did he think it was unusual for an ox to gore? Absolutely not.
Because it said we're letting you go for the first three times because that's his nature, but now you're saying
no. The first three times, is it normally his pattern to do it? Mm-hmm. Is it normally for the first opinion?
Yes, sir.
Do ox run wild?
Yes.
You have to assume that they're not controlled. Therefore, it's perfectly normal that what? That it should go, and I should have paid 100%. Since it's a little difficult for me to know when my ox is going to get angry and want to hurt somebody, the Torah says the first three times, I'm going to let you off the hook.
Partially.
Right, partially, 50%. According to the second opinion, the reason why Karen is only 50%, because it's Meshune. It's very unusual. Ox are normally calm animals. They're like a little puppy, Fluffy in the house. Does anybody ever suspect that Fluffy's going to go crazy and bite anybody?
Only if it's a pit bull.
No, right, but if it's not a pit bull, people don't expect it. So here, you are being assessed based on the fact that the animal acted out of character. It's out of character. You know what? The first time, second time, third time, I'll let you believe me that what? It was out of character. By the time it happens the fourth time, what does the Torah say? This is no longer out of character, buddy. This is your wild animal. So what emerges then is then a second possible understanding about the uniqueness of the mazik of karet. The reason why you might only pay 50% is because from the halacha's point of view, it is such an unusual occurrence that I really did not, and I could not have anticipated it, and you and me have no responsibility to guard against it. Because ordinary acts are calm, collected, cool, just like Fluffy. And if my guy goes berserk and he starts goring, that's something highly unusual. Highly unusual. So according to this opinion, if I were to walk into Bezdin and say, Shimuna Rabbeisai Dayanei Mumchen, Mr. Bezdin, my axe went a little crazy, and he gored, and he caused $5,000 worth of damage, I'm admitting it, walk out, scot-free. You don't have to pay. You don't have to pay. Does that sound fair? No, it doesn't. But if you look at it from the perspective of a fine, what is the purpose of a fine? To make you aware of what? That something happened. Well, I'm acknowledging that it happened. I'm acknowledging that it happened. And therefore, to some extent, the Torah doesn't have to punish you to recognize that you better be careful. I have come to Bezdin and acknowledged my wrongdoing. I should have been more careful with my acts. He's not just a plain, ordinary Fluffy. So the rule of Pinky is, Modeh Biknas Patur. So if I grab your Rambam and it's worth, if I steal your Rambam in your house, like if I hold you up and I steal your Rambam, I never have to pay kefil because I'm not a gun. I'm a gazlan. A gazlan, somebody who is just holds you up, only pays 100%. He doesn't get fined. Only the person who is afraid to confront his victim pays double. So what?
So if you're held up,
he only pays you if you stole. That's correct.
It's interesting parallel to acknowledgement.
Correct. Because that's what the Medrash says. Mm-hmm. The guy who holds you up, he doesn't care about anybody. Doesn't care about the Rabbanu Shalom. Doesn't care about you. So at least he's honest. He's consistent. He's not a hypocrite. I'm afraid of nobody. I'm not afraid of God. I'm not afraid of man. Walk up. Give me your money or I'll blow your head off. The Ganav, he's an hypocrite. He's afraid of man, but he's not afraid of the Rabbanu Shalom. So he'll break into your house when you're not here. Such a person thinks he's, I'm a Goy Tzaddik. I'm afraid of man. So we saddle him with double the punishment. Double the punishment. So the value, if I come to Beth and I acknowledge that I stole the Rambam, the $100 I paid. It's only the fine that I get off. Maideh biknas is patur. By chatzi nezek, there is a debate between these two opinions. According to the first opinion, if I come to Beth and I admit my ox score, I'll pay the 50% all three times. Because by right, I should have paid you 100%. Torah let me off. According to the second opinion, the first three times that it happened, I'm pretty smart, I know. Mm-hmm. I know the halacha. I'm going to run to Bezdin, admit it before the witnesses get there. Maybe there won't be any witnesses. And I'll be off the hook completely. Off the hook. So the machloikis is, what is the nature of chatzi nezek? Is chatzi nezek really a reduction of the $100? Or is chatzi nezek an assessment above and beyond zero? Above and beyond zero. And the number one difference that would emerge is Moda, that's one of the many. One of them is Moda Biknas
patur. Mode biknas patur. Mode biknas. If you admit what's happening, what's happening? If you admit. Go right ahead. What was that?
Is that mission meant to be Bein Adam L'Makom or Bein Adam L'Chaveru?
So that's an excellent question. So if it's purely a fine, and we acknowledge the admission, then well, who do you think it is? It's between you and God. Mm-hmm. That's correct. If it's dealing with a mammon obligation, your admission is Bein Adam L'Chaveru, because you can, whenever you transgress in the realm of Bein Adam L'Chaveru, you cannot be granted mechila until you seek mechila from the person who you wrong. So well, that would be the first thing. I'd have to be moded. You know what? I stole from you.
So the whole thing about Mazikin and about how it's so illogical in a certain way, is it meant to be a paradigm of tshuva in a certain way? Does it have anything to do with that?
I haven't seen it that way. No. I don't know. I haven't seen much discussion relating this. Your question is a good question. Whether it's Bein Adam L'Makom or Bein Adam, it's a very important question. So certainly the role of Knas is only Bein Adam L'Makom. Mamon, where it, if you are, then it's two things. It's acknowledging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that I did something wrong. But first and foremost, you have to acknowledge to the injured party, I injured you, I hurt you, I damaged you. I have to make amends on my part.
So Karen is extended from us to other cases. Is that correct?
No.
Is it uniquely for
only for the Karen?
Okay.
When my ox goes into your house, into your backyard, and eats the grapes, what's the name of the mazik? Shane, everybody says Shane is not a fine. I pay for the damages. Only the mazik of Karen exhibits a 50% reduction the first time. Not a boar, not a fire, not my animal that walks and steps on your utensils, not the animal that goes in and eats your crops, only the ox that gores.
And no other animal.
No. We will learn in another Mishnah that all of this is only Dibra Torah Belashon B'nei Adam. The Torah says because ox good, but it applies to a snake.
Okay.
It applies. We will see the end of the parrot. Next of 1 foot. There's a Mishnah about that. Does it apply to other animals? In fact, one opinion is going to be that a rattlesnake is a muad right away. Because that's what he is. He likes to damage. He pays the full assessment right up. We'll see that. We'll get to that. It's the last mission of the first parak. Last mission of the first parak. Yes. Now, just go back to the end of the Mishnah for a second. Go back to the end of the Mishnah. Go back to the first page. In the second line, the Mishnah stated that you need Edim. And the Mishnah here listed two qualifications of witnesses. They had to be free people, not slaves. They had to be members of our faith community, not Gentiles. As you well know, the Mishnah assumes that you know that I'm the only kosher witness in this room. Women cannot be a witness. It cannot be. It will be.
Women in my family sit for Kiddush Friday night.
What?
Women in my family sit
for Kiddush Friday night. Oh, I love
that. It is one of the things that we will change as soon as there's a Sanhedrin. I mean it.
Yeah.
No, first thing I told you.
Yeah.
Hallel Yom Atzmaut for every Sat Mechasid. That will be the first psak of the Sanhedrin. Yom Atzmaut, every sat mechassid is going to say Hallel. That's the first psak. Then we're going to abolish Yontif Sheni. That's it.
That's
all.
That's
said he dogs exactly like Ben Gurion. He doesn't say Tachnum.
Doesn't say Hollow, right? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Now, it's the way we learn, it's a very complex. The pasuk, the pasuk from which we learn that women are qualified to offer testimony is a drash that looks like this. It is so, it's the Medrash Halacha, but it's so far from the pshat in the pasuk, it's just unbelievable. So, and it's in a perfect illustration, the Rambam writes that when you have such drashot, which are made by a bet din, any subsequent bezin can change it. Any subsequent bezin can change it. So the Mishnah really comes and tells me, Vahanashim Bechlal Hanezek. The women cannot be members of the court. The women cannot be witnesses. But they can be litigants in court. Hanashim Bechlal Hanezek. Women are included in the parsha of Nizakin. Now, the Gemara quotes a pasuk. It quotes a pasuk. Fine. Tell me what conclusion you would extract by the mere fact that I have to have a Mishnah to tell me, ultimately a pasuk, to tell me that women can be a litigant. Tell me, supporting something we said a half hour ago, 40 minutes ago, what else would this happen to support? What premise would this support?
Women own land. Property?
What?
Own land.
No.
Ownership of property?
No. About the nature of damages according to Torah law. If it would be purely logical, pure logic, would anybody ever come up with a distinction and say, if I damage a man's property, I pay for the damage of a woman's property, I'm exempt? What would I need? You mean to tell me? I need a Mishnah to tell me that women are included in the category of Nezer? And if not for the Mishnah, what would I say? They're not included in women. Why? Because sometimes the Torah uses the expression, ki yiftach ish bor, ki yigach shor ish et shorei eyu. And what might you be tempted to infer based on the word ish? Now, I guarantee you, I am convinced, without having spoken to the Rabbi Yeshua, that the word ish in that phrase does not mean man. It means people. But the Torah speaks in the masculine form 30,000 times. So it could have been interpreted quite simply. And if the rules of damages would simply be logical, we would simply say, well, of course women are included. But based on the fact that we have adopted the position that the laws of compensation for damage is an absolute chidush, which who created? The Torah created. It is possible to entertain. Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Bichvaydo Evatzma, could have set it up in such a fashion where there are bizarre rules that it's only what? Only men, not women. I could have heard of it.
Well, if you're already saying that, you know, if you damages to a non Jew are not owed, you're already being illogical. If they're not
correct.
Owed to a non Jew, be not owed.
Correct! I grant you that 1,000%. That's correct. That is correct. If it's not being logical, and I would say, logical? I should distinguish between a Jew and a Gentile? I should distinguish between an adult and a child? If a child does damage, I have no recourse. None whatsoever. We're going to learn that in the 8th parak. A kid does damage to my property, I have no recourse whatsoever. I cannot sue the father or the mother. Does that make a lot of sense? I don't think so.
No.
Can you imagine? No. I'm responsible for my property, but not for my 5-year-old kid. My ox, my dog, not for my father. I have to do whatever he wants. It's very illogical at times.
Yes.
If the 30,000 times where you said ish means person rather than man.
Yes.
Why the exception when the Midrash Halakha says anashim do anashim? What? Ma pitom?
I asked the same question. I don't know why.
Okay.
The only way is because the way the traditionalists will explain it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said women cannot be witnesses.
But that's a Midrash Halakha.
No.
No?
Okay. The Midrash Halakha just comes to find a clue in the text to support something that was already in Torah Shabbat. Uh-huh. That's all. That might be the role of Midrash Halakha. Okay, we'll stop here, Rabotai. Next of all, we will do something on Yoni Hanukkah, and then we'll continue in 2 weeks with the Bava Kamma.
Are there Hebrew names for the first three categories that are under the category?
Yes, Shane is Karen, Karen, Shane is regular. Karen, that's
the opposite
of the
act and
for Shane. That's one opinion. The other opinion of the Gemara, Shor is everything. Shane, Karen, Regel. And the third one is Z, not is other one. So there are four main categories: animal, creature, animal, pit, man, fire. According to the other opinion, that's correct. Walking, walking, very close.